Chapter 33, Cultural Evolution versus Political Revolution. By the time 1968 came to a close, 555,000 young Americans had been sent to fight in Vietnam. Over 30,000 had already died in this Asian misadventure. A war which continued to be popular among those born before 1930 and extremely unpopular among those born after 1946. Within 4 months of Nixon's inauguration, the American regime was feverishly waging two wars, one abroad and one at home. While the Air Force ran secret bombing raids in Cambodia, the FBI, under J. Edgar Hoover, by this time certifiably senile, launched the Contel Pro operation, infiltration and provocation of anti-war, black and student groups. To avoid being yanked back in prison for violation of parole, Eldridge Cleaver fled to Cuba and subsequently set up a community of political exiles in Algeria. Campuses throughout the country, even staid old Harvard, seethed with open rebellion. One Richard Kleindienst, Assistant Attorney General, publicly called for a campaign of repression and suppression against ideological criminals. That means criminal ideas. There were enemies without and enemies within. When the colleges closed in June, Rosemary and I headed back to the ranch to review and restore. The hot fashion trend that spring was teepee chic. Rosemary and I erected our Art Nouveau wigwam in the blossoming apple orchard. I wrote a chapter about nonviolence for a book published by Time Life and filled a notebook on the future of American politics. I was toying with the idea that I might run for public office if I could stay out of prison. Who could deny that the old system of Republican government spelled out in Philadelphia in 1776 and in the Constitutional Convention of 1787 had been outmoded by rapid transportation and instant communication? It was patently absurd to elect a representative to advocate our interest in an age when the capital was no longer 8 days' ride by horse carriage from Boston or Atlanta. As we moved into the era of computers and electronics, intelligence rather than territory was the central concern of government. In the information age, the function of the state was to facilitate education, communication, innovation, entertainment, to raise the intelligence of the populace. I jotted down a political platform that would be considered moderate by 21st century standards and thought about how to publicize it. One Monday morning, we woke to the barking of dogs. First, the warning cries of Fang, and then Finnegan, our new Australian dingo. Then came the answering bays of the dogs of the approaching party from the main camp. Rosemary slipped into the diaphanous gown made famous by G. Gordon Liddy. "It's Monday, isn't it?" she said apprehensively. For 6 months, we had been awaiting the Supreme Court verdict on the Laredo case. Decisions came down on Monday morning. The voice of John Griggs could be heard above the din. He appeared at the teepee opening with the members of the Brotherhood. They were smiling broadly. "We just heard it on the radio. The Supreme Court cut you loose, 9-0. They ruled that the marijuana law is unconstitutional." Rosemary and I looked in each other's eyes and kissed. It was one of those great moments. Someone was shouting. Down by the entrance road were three strange cars. "Looks like police," said John with reflex caution. "It's reporters," said Rosemary. The men started walking up the slope to the teepee, some carrying cases of photographic equipment, ABC, CBS, NBC. Rosemary and I stood in front of the teepee while the TV cameras whirled. "What's your next move?" "I'm going to run for governor of California," I said. The reporters seemed to like the idea. The incumbent governor was an undistinguished movie actor, a Brezhnev-type hardliner who did not conceal his disdain for the poor, the blacks, the hip, the Latinos, the women, the students, the liberals, the young, and the journalists. His name, of course, was Ronald Reagan. "What's your platform going to be?" said one reporter. The state of California, I said, should be run like a successful business enterprise. Instead of extorting taxes from the citizens, a well-run state should return a profit. Anyone smart enough to live in California should be paid a dividend. I handed out a 3-page political program for eliminating all taxes, licensing frivolities, and converting high schools, colleges, prisons into profitable institutions. Direct electronic voting would replace elected representatives, leading to decentralization and more local autonomy. You know, you could stir up a lot of people with these ideas, said one TV cameraman. Rosemary said, yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. Our euphoria was damped a bit the next day at my lawyer's office. It seemed that if the government had its way, I wouldn't be around to campaign for office. I've been on the phone talking to the prosecutors of your cases around the country, said my lawyer. Hey, they got you booked for a busy winter schedule. For starters, you were such a hit in Laredo, now they want you back for a repeat performance in December. Laredo, I said. Hey, we won that case in the Supreme Court. That's true, but the feds have refiled on a technicality. You're going to be tried this time on the charge of transportation of marijuana, specifically driving a car for a distance of 100 yards from the center of the International Bridge to the customs checkpoint. The maximum sentence is 20 years and a $10,000 fine. You got to be kidding, I said. And that's just the beginning. You're billed for a personal appearance later in December for the Laguna Beach case. And after the first of the year, you go back to Poughkeepsie for the 11 Millbrook indictments. My guess is that with local juries, you'll be found guilty. It's almost certain you'll get these convictions reversed in appeals court. But that may take 2 years. Meanwhile, they can hold you in county jail without a bond. So I'm facing 20 plus 10 plus 11 years for a half ounce of marijuana and 2 roaches, none of which were mine. Affirmative. And even if I fight the cases successfully, I'll still spend time in jail awaiting the appeal verdicts. Yep. And you'll spend plenty of money, too. What's happening is the Nixon administration has announced an all-out war on drugs. They know they can't stop people from using dope, so the best they can do is jail the symbol. And you're the symbol, and they have this 3-prong offensive moving in on you, and they can keep arresting you on phony charges whenever and wherever they want. What can I do? You better run like hell to get nominated for governor. Public outcry is the only protection you have. There's another direction to run, said I. I'm going right down now to apply for a passport. I have no intention of becoming a martyr. The last weeks of 1969, which were the last weeks of the decade of the 60s, involved a dismal round of court appearances, preliminary hearings, pretrial motions, all draining of time, energy, and money. In December, I was retried in Laredo for the silver box. If I had taken the stand and truthfully denied knowledge of the grass, I would have, could have, been acquitted. My lawyers, one local and one Manhattan, seemed at a loss. They waived any defense and I was found guilty in 10 minutes. Don't worry, we'll win on appeal, said the lawyers. Next, it was back to Orange County for the 2 roaches trial. Here, the problem was complicated by the fact that Rosemary and Jack were clearly guilty of possessing illegal drugs. If I fought my case and won, my wife and son would get hit with prison terms. If I was found guilty, then Rosemary and Jack would get off their probation.